So I would like to, with that, invite Mark to talk a little more about the agreement, the legal environment, the do's and don'ts. What do people think about when they want to now outsource and they have selected their partner, but what kind of things they put in place? And we'll be happy to hear what you have to say.
Yes. Thank you, Venkat. Thank you, Kimberly, for inviting me to speak here. I'm here to talk to you a little bit about what do we recommend our clients to do when they consider to outsource an important business function, such as training services, for instance. And it is a significant change to your business if you decide to hand over a function which you took care of earlier yourself to a more or less unknown third-party service provider. So the outsourcing service agreement, or the master service agreement, as you call it, Venkat, is really the basis for a successful outsourcing. After the introduction, where I want to highlight some trends in the current market and some reasons to outsource, in particular outsource training services, I'm going to talk to you about the outsourcing services agreement. What do we put in there? What kind of clauses are required? And which issues need to be dealt with at this end? And at the end, just a couple of words regarding data protection, which is an important area when you talk about employee data, which is involved naturally when you do training services. Now, what is outsourcing? We all know what it is. Outsourcing implies that, as I said earlier, that you did something yourself, and then you decide, I don't want to do it myself anymore, so I close down my infrastructure allocated to this business function, or I dispose of it otherwise, and I hand over the responsibility for this area to a service provider. Now, what are the key drivers for outsourcing? When we discuss outsourcing transactions with our clients, they tell us, okay, we need to focus on our core business. As you said, I don't want to bother with all those administrative stuff related to training. Naturally, cost savings, that's the most important driver for outsourcing, in particular in these days. But also important is the balance sheet impact. You are able to dispose of the assets you allocated to take care of this business function. So you can sell those off, normally at book value, to the service provider, if the service provider agrees to take on this existing business unit. So you can sell the assets, and with the incoming cash, you can reduce your debts. Fourthly, market-funded service improvement. Laura was talking about that a little bit, and I will discuss that a little bit more with you, in particular regarding training services. Okay, cost savings, naturally a reduction of the price rather than flexibilizing it, consolidation of services, re-engineering of processes. So you may realize when you look at your training services, okay, here we have maybe a couple of training modules which have a certain overlap, so you can restructure and re-engineer the processes. You can use IT infrastructure for delivery rather than classroom, so there's a lot of cost saving attached to that. Possibly the supplier may be able to, the outsourcing service provider may be able to retain cheaper supplier, since he probably rendering training services to various customers. So there are some economies of scale. Service improvement, NIIT, they know how to render training services, and they know how to do it. They know how to deliver cutting-edge services, so that is an area where you may benefit from the extended know-how of the service provider, who also is in a position to gain insight from a large group of customers. Like the insights you have gained together with Diageo, you are able to transfer those insights to other customers So there's a big potential for a win-win situation at this end. Just to give you a feel how a lawyer would approach an outsourcing transaction, you have on the one end side a pure mergers and acquisition transaction where you sell off a business unit and you don't care what happens with it. You sell it to a competitor or whatever. So there's no real outsourcing agreement, no ongoing agreement between this business unit, which was sold off, and your own company, apart from possibly some transitional services agreement in case, for instance, the business unit which was sold needs some IT services or HR services which were delivered in the old structure from a holding level. But that is just a short-term ancillary services agreement to enable the purchaser to get this to get these kind of services from a third-party service provider. Then we have the typical classical outsourcing contract. That's where you sell off the assets of a business unit and at the same time conclude a 8, 5, 10 years services agreement to get the outsourced serving throughout the contract's term. Of course, possibly you can also outsource a business function without selling off a business unit, which means that you may use the employees to do different things. You may simply lay off a couple of employees or consolidate otherwise. What are the general trends in the European market? I think that's nothing really new. It's an ongoing development. What our clients do more and more is often nearshoring, right sourcing, real-time delivery is an issue. Core capabilities are defined less restrictive. What always strikes me is peculiar if banks start to source out their transaction banking. So if you do a wire transfer, it's not your own bank who effects the transfer. It's a more or less an IT service provider who does this. And if that is not considered a core business anymore, what then? okay. The dependency is higher. The closer you get to your really core to your core business, the dependency is higher. So we see a lot of multi-sourcing where a company which is considering to outsource a business function is not relying on one service provider but on several, so that in case one doesn't perform, it's easier to switch over to an alternative service provider. However, on the other side, we have also seen quite some negative experiences in the last couple of years, which has led to a reintegration of services, which of course is something you would rather avoid because of the cost pertaining thereto. Or you have second generation outsourcing, which is always difficult if you're trying to move over the services from a service provider to its competitor. That's a very cumbersome and difficult process. So we have also advised our clients with respect to disputes, both regarding service quality and regarding the pricing. But nevertheless, we are faced with an increasing demand for outsourcing-related advice. So from that, I conclude that, in particular, the cost pressure resulting from the current crisis is triggering or increasing the pressure to outsource. What have companies outsourced? I guess you're all aware of this. It started with IT-related services, and more it went over to include business services, business processes, transaction banking, logistic outsourcing is a big thing for us. Event management, facility management, but also training services. And I think training services is really an outsourcing market which is about to grow significantly because companies realize how important it is and also how much administrative and overhead work is attached to it. Okay, why training? Why would we outsource training services? We touched this already. I think I'll just skip the first couple of bullet points. Now, the last one, know-how is crucial to success in many areas. Yes, so I think that some companies will look at this and say, okay, we need to outsource it. We need to make sure we get the best services possible in the training area. But I'm also afraid that other companies will say, I'd rather do it by myself just to keep the know-how. Especially businesses which are know-how driven more than others, consulting businesses. It is a tricky question whether you consider to outsourcing such an important business function, which is critical to your success. So I think the important it is important to bear in mind or to consider the industry background of the service provider to really make sure that also the training content, not only the delivery and the IT based automation is state of the art, but also the content which is delivered is really cutting edge. All right, that was the introduction. Now let's get to the outsourcing services agreement. First, I'd like to cover a couple of general issues with you. Starting phase is difficult if you really transfer the assets to the service provider, because then you have a big bang, and from Sunday to Monday, the responsibility to render the services with the same assets is transferred to the service provider. So most service providers ask for a sort of transitional liability scheme during the first couple of weeks to make sure that this transition happens smoothly, and in case any problems occur, they are not fully liable if they don't meet the agreed service levels. Definition of services is also a very central part of the contract. Because first of all, from the customer's perspective, you need to define what you want to have. It's kind of obvious. Yeah? However, if you take over a functioning business unit, you will not be able to render any kind of services with the existing infrastructure. In other words, if you buy an old car, you cannot participate in a Formula One race. Yeah. However, if you purchase the services without transferring an existing business unit, you can procure off the shelf services, where the provider will have the appropriate description, or you can procure tailor-made or customized services, where you can agree on a service description from scratch. It's a greenfield approach. That is the as-is dispute. Here, the second to last bullet point. That's what I mean with the problems related to purchasing the existing business function, because the service provider will always say, "Okay, I'm purchasing what you have, so I can only deliver what you have received in the past." Yeah. And the service, the customer will say, "Wait a minute! I want a market-funded service improvement." So usually you find a structured approach where the service provider gets some time to somehow change the operation and move it to a higher level. Service recipient, that's in case such as Diageo, a group of companies is procuring training services for the entire group. So you will need to define who is actually entitled to receive the services, which for the customer is an issue which is not so easy because of transfer pricing difficulties, because for each service the central holding entity delivers through the service provider, it needs to charge the local group companies a fair and reasonable transfer price. Otherwise, the tax authorities will not like it because you may or may not move profits from one country to the other. Now, scope of training services, what does it include? What can it include? Training platform, the underlying IT engine, as you mentioned, the design of training, the content, documentation of the training. This is very important also to keep the documentation on an updated level, so the know-how is somehow tangible. Very important issue for the customer. Delivery of training, analysis of training results. This really ties into the question of what are the measurable results. I mean, okay, all our people are happy. They enjoyed the class, so they make their cross at the highest grade. But does it bring anything to us? It an important issue. Management of training services, of course, and what I didn't write on this slide is a very important one, is consulting. I don't know whether, I think you did quite an amount of consulting in the Diageo project, because really the customer needs to get the best out of the service provider. In order to get this, you need to give some advice. What do you need? How can we jointly define the needs? What are the best way to tackle those needs? This needs to be a joint process. In outsourcing projects, it's always a question, is this consulting, is this an extra service which the customer pays for, or is it a marketing effort of the service provider who's simply trying to sell as much as he can? Tricky issue. SLAs for training services. It is important really to carefully consider what are the targets with respect to each service item. And then for each service item, you need to define what do we expect? How can we transfer our expectations into measurable and objective service levels? Which is easy if you're talking about availability of IT platforms, if you talk about reaction time, but it is more difficult if we come into the area of what is really the cost benefit. This is always an area where you have to apply some sort of judgment. And if you have to apply judgment, it's always difficult to agree on a measurable service level. Also, service targets regarding the reporting, it's very important from the customer's perspective that you really get regular updates as to the actual performance of the service provider. In areas where it's really difficult to define comprehensive service targets, service levels, we have advised to define a maximum churn rate with respect to crucial employees, which then of course needs to define who is crucial and what not. Because if there's a constant employee turnover on the service provider side, it is difficult to get into an ongoing constructive mode. Just some general rules on SLAs for training services. The SLAs need to be clear and objective. This is really the main problem here. Oftentimes, we get some wording drafted by our clients. We would like to do this, and then we lawyers come in and say, we have some wording, some words like reasonable success or adequate performance. This doesn't really help. This only triggers some disputes. So that's where some additional work needs to be done in order to arrive at a solid contractual structure, which is the basis for the future relationship. okay, reporting of SLA compliance, that's clear, but then the question is, okay, does the customer trust in the reports, or is there an audit right? Always a difficult issue, because the service provider, yeah, of course we're not going to tell you anything which is not correct, but at the same time we don't want to be we don't want to have any service any disruption of our service delivery because you come and audit us. So that's a tricky issue. Trust related issues are always difficult. Then very important also, in particular in relation to training services, is to define the consequences in case of failure to meet the SLAs. This is not a pleasant discussion in the negotiations, because the customer needs to ask for liquidated damages, contractual penalties, reduction of the remuneration, things like this. And of course, nobody likes to discuss issues like this. But in particular in areas where you don't have a specific damage in case of a breach, you need to define precisely what is the consequence. Yeah, for instance, if you have, logistics outsourcing and the provider doesn't meet the deadline, you have a clear financial loss, because you have to pay the penalties for late delivery, you may lose some business, so this is tangible. This is euro, you're losing euros. If the training services don't work, it is very difficult for the customer to argue, we incurred an actual loss of money. Our financial situation deteriorated because of this breach of the agreed service level. So this is a difficult area. Most of the time it's left open until the end, so you have some nice blanks in the contract and you just need to fill in some numbers. That's where we lawyers say, it's up to you, commercial issue, not our business. A very important issue for the success of an outsourcing relationship is service management and communication. I mean, this is something where lawyers, I admit, sometimes they smile a bit and say, yeah, well, okay, the hard things like service levels, liability, termination rights, that's what we take care of. Communication structures, yeah, we leave that up to you. You may agree on what you deem fit, and that's fine. But I think that's a great mistake. Communication structures are really absolutely crucial to the success of an outsourcing project. Thank you very much, Laura. First of all, you need to think about who talks with whom. What are the interfaces between the service provider and the customer? You don't, on the one hand side, you don't want any employee of the customer to pick up the phone and call up Venkat and say, hey, wait a minute, I have a problem with my training session here. What can you do for me? So you need to provide for certain communication channels. There, consider with respect to training services, is it the HR department who's the main interface, or in particular for the transfer of product-related know-how to the content designer of the service provider, do we need to provide for some other interfaces where we have a structured communication in order to make sure that the content of the training is meeting our requirements? Structured communication, we always recommend regular meetings, and if our clients keep telling us, well, okay, at the beginning we may need to talk every month or every week, but after 2 years, why should we talk every month or every week? It's not required. We keep telling them, do it. And if it's a 1 minute call, hey, how are you? It's fine. Are there any problems? No. Period. It's fine. It's good. Then just do it to keep the communication going. We really recommend this. Also, very important lawyer point, protocols. Even if there's no problem, just send a quick wrap-up summary of what has been discussed. Both parties sign it. No problem. Fine. Escalation mechanisms. Important to really spend some thought on who are the right people in the hierarchy to discuss issues. You have the working level, you may have the mid-management, the top management. So really spend some time to consider what are the right time frames required and things like this, and fix it in the contract. Regarding the dispute resolution in outsourcing agreements, which really work only if both parties are happy. If the service provider is not happy because the price is too low, it's not going to be some fun for the customer neither. Yeah? If the service performance is poor, the customer is not happy. So since it is a very relationship-driven transaction outsourcing, we recommend to consider mediation services, which means that you will just have somebody to discuss it with you, but he will not make any binding proposal, or he will not make a binding decision. So he may or may not make a proposal how he thinks it might be, what might be a fair solution. But most mediators even refuse to make a proposal. They are just facilitating the discussions. But it can be of great help. On the other side, of course, you need to agree on what to do if even mediation doesn't help. So arbitration or ordinary courts. I'm not a big fan of arbitration. I recommend, because also the German legal system and the courts are very efficient and with predictable results, I recommend the ordinary courts. But arbitration certainly is an option too, in particular if you have a cross-border outsourcing, because then neither party will be willing to, you know, settle for the other party's legal system. Remuneration, there are many ways to tackle it, and it also boils down obviously to a commercial issue. However, in the last years we have negotiated many remuneration models, and in the end there's quite a lot of legal fine-tuning required. And so what we have seen in the past is, in particular, if you take over a running business unit, you have cost-plus models, because you're taking over a cost structure which you are not fully aware of. You conducted your due diligence, okay, but you didn't own it yet. So what you can agree is a cost-plus structure where you say, okay, we reimburse you the cost plus an operating profit of X percent. Sometimes you have this for a transitional period, and after that you have a structured process which allows you to move over from a cost-plus model to a price per unit. Because obviously the cost-plus model is very comfortable for the supplier, because he just has his costs and his margin. He probably would even benefit to increase the cost, because then the margin would increase with it. That's why you also have obligation to reduce the cost and things like this. But my experience is that more and more deals we arrive at from the start, we arrive at cost per unit or fixed remuneration with a basic fee, so that both parties know what they're dealing with. In particular, if you have outsourcing projects which last for a long time, say you have, I don't know, 5 years or even 10 years. Duration of the contract. Very important and really also very tricky issue is how do you deal with the need for price adaptation? And unfortunately, there's no real, you know, there's no great solution to this. I don't know who of you saw a benchmark clause, for instance. Yeah, you see, they are very long. They are very long, 2 or 3 pages again. I'm sorry. And in the end, the result of a benchmark is not very satisfying, because you always need to consider the special circumstances of the case. You need to. There's never. you're never really in a situation where you can actually compare the services of one service provider to the services of another service provider. This is rarely the case. So in the benchmarking clause, you will need to agree how do you normalize the differences, who is going to be the benchmark, who's going to do the benchmark, and things like this. It's a very frustrating process also to apply a benchmark clause, and the result is always a long process, and at the end of which neither party is satisfied. Nevertheless, in particular, if we advise the customer, we push for a benchmark clause, because at least it gives the customer some leverage to negotiate a price reduction, even if the benchmark is not actually carried out in the end. You can, of course, agree on a price adjustment formula, where you agree on a formula depending on, for instance, the development of the cost for employees, you know, or the cost for IT resources, things like this. This, of course, is possible. It's a bit dangerous because you never know how things develop and whether the cost development as reflected by an index actually hits you in the same way. So that's a risk on the service provider side. In Germany, there are some specific legal restrictions as to formulas like this, but Germany is really the only country within the European Union who has a restriction like this. Training-related issues, price on the basis of time spent, in particular with respect to the design of content. It's difficult for the service provider to know in advance how much time will I need to invest to provide the required content, in particular if the customer requires an approval process. In which the customer may tell, oh no, I don't like this, you need to provide a couple of slides more on this one. So difficult, so sometimes there's no other way than to agree on a price on the basis of time spent. Then price per training, as you have done, price is an off-the-shelf product, so you can agree on a price per participant, which of course is beneficial to the customer. If you need to design it, you may agree on a certain flat fee to cover your, at least a proportion of your fixed cost, and then you have a price per user. If you're discussing models like this, you will also always discuss minimum user numbers and things like this. Tricky issue. Cost or price reduction. I think Ian, you touched it briefly. If the customer expectation is that costs will be reduced, prices will be lower, then most of the time it turns out that real cost reductions are only possible if the customer agrees to move to certain off-the-shelf products, so that you have economies of scale because you use the same product for customer A and customer B. If the customer insists on a custom-made training with the detail he may be used from his earlier training services, then it is very difficult for the service provider to actually decrease the cost. So if it's not possible for the customer to agree to off-the-shelf products at the start of the transaction, we oftentimes build in some incentives for the customer to discuss at least a shift to off-the-shelf products, or at least to minimize the peculiarities of the service he wants to have. Service changes, that's a general issue in outsourcing contracts which last for a long time, and throughout the term of the contract there may be a need to adapt the services, to change it, And in that case, the outsourcing service agreement needs to provide for certain mechanism to actually effect those changes. Because if you have a long-lasting outsourcing contract and the customer wants to change something, he's entirely dependent on the service provider. Yeah. The service provider can say, well, we agreed to this. Yeah, we're happy to do the change you would like to have, but it will cost you X. And this X is most of the time higher than what the customer wants to hear. So this is a difficult situation from a customer perspective. So we try to agree as much as possible up front if we represent the customer. Just by considering what kind of changes might be necessary in which areas and how could you deal with them. Now, liability, that's the lawyer's favorite subject. And I think I think the discussion on liability caps and things like this should really be kept to a minimum. In particular, if you talk about training services, it really doesn't help either party to provide for complicated liability schemes with liability caps, depending on whether it's gross negligence or willful intent or slight negligence and things like this. It is better to think about, you know, operative processes to improve the services. But nevertheless, of course, I'm a lawyer, so I need to say this. You need to discuss liability, and you need to have a clear picture of what are the liabilities of the service provider. In classical outsourcing transactions, the service provider will always argue, listen, earlier you were doing the services yourself. So if there anything goes wrong, it's your own liability, and there's nobody to take it away from you. So by outsourcing it to me, why should it be any different? You know, we do our best. You know, okay, if we do something intentionally, we'll cover the damages. But in case of negligence that can happen to anyone, why should we be liable for anything? I don't think it's a very strong argument, but we hear it quite sometimes, repeatedly. Internal risk becomes external risk. That's what I mean by that. Okay, all right. Termination issue is important, in particular if the service provider has taken over a business unit with assets and a cost structure attached to it, because then you need the term needs to be long enough for the service provider to be able to recover the cost. Yeah. That's why you have terms which in a classical outsourcing transaction last for like between 5 and 10 years, roughly. Termination for cause, of course, material breach. Do you define it or not? Termination for convenience, also always something that a customer wants, the service provider doesn't like it. Termination for convenience usually is only possible if the customer agrees to reimburse the investment. Then, important from a customer's perspective, always agree on a long enough notice period, because if you agree to terminate, which is really the worst case scenario, you need to be, you know, make the required preparations to move the service over to another service provider or reintegrate it. Exit provisions, we touched upon it already, very important, also not a very pleasant discussion, because you're discussing worst case scenarios. But then again, if you cannot agree on exit scenarios, if you're still good friends when you negotiate the deal in the first place, how can you ever agree on a smooth and swift transit transfer process if you're in dispute and the contract has been terminated? So agree on it up front. Exit provision training services, very difficult for the customer, because imagine you have outsourced your training function and you have been doing that for 10 years, and then something goes wrong and you need to do it yourself again. You don't have any know-how anymore. The documentation was the training content, the documentation was all done by the service provider. So you need to make sure that you get this back somehow. Yeah? On the other hand side, the service provider, he may be willing to give it to you, but he definitely will have a huge problem if you want to do a second generation outsourcing and retain another service provider, because this is competitive know-how, and you certainly don't want to, you know, release all your confidential IP and everything, content, to your competitors. So this is a very tricky area. Also, if the service provider took over a business unit, you need to transfer it back. However, it needs to evolve further, so you might receive back an entirely different organization than you sold off in the first place. What changes are okay? What cost? Very difficult. What cost? Book value? It's a tricky issue. Confidentiality, non-compete clause, committing the customer. We have seen we have seen customers, service recipients, who received back an organization which was well managed, best practice, and then they started to think about, wait a minute, we can make use of this. Why don't we render training services
as a business?
Yeah, it has happened, not in the training area, but in the in another area. So it's really important to really think about what will happen in case we need to discuss exit scenarios in 10 years down the road. Right. Major issues. Other disaster recovery and business continuity. Has this been an issue in your master services agreement with Diageo? Exclusivity, minimum volumes, that's related to the whole pricing issue. Assignability and right to subcontract. In particular for banking institutions, financial institutions, it is mandatory to provide detailed rules on the service provider's right to outsource. But also for other customers, it might be interesting to know who is actually rendering the services to me. Is it going to be an IIT, or is it going to be a subcontractor of NIIT? Things like this. Group policies. A very tricky issue, because you may have group policies which may apply to any kind of thing, to training, to IT services, data protection, confidentiality, things like this. And most of the time, those group policies, they are not this thick, but they're this thick. And then most of the time, at the end of the negotiations, you run into a problem where the customer says, wait a minute, I forgot, I have a couple of group policies. Here, service provider, you need to comply with those. Sometimes that's difficult. Applicable law, okay, that's clear, but what you agree on in particular if you have cross-border outsourcing. Sometimes we agree on Swiss law, even though no party is located in Switzerland and no party has a Swiss lawyer, but simply to find an agreement, we end up with Swiss law instead of American or German law or whatever else it may be. I don't know whether that makes sense, but... Okay. That was it to regarding the outsourcing services agreement. I hope you're not overwhelmed. I'm sorry. So I'm happy to Venkat, if you want to circulate the presentation to everyone, that's fine. So you have all the information. So okay, let me. Do I have two more minutes?
Sure.
Okay. Data protection. In Germany right now, it's a big deal. I don't know whether you heard of it. We had the telecom scandal. We had the Deutsche Bahn scandal. We had the Lidl scandal. Lidl is a discounter. I don't know whether they are active in the UK as well. Mm-hmm. They all had data leaks or investigated their suppliers or their employees. Big scandal with media coverage. And also in outsourcing contracts, data protection is an important issue. As soon as the outsourcing service provider is getting a hold of personal data related to employees, it's absolutely sufficient if it's the name of an employee. Then the data protection law applies. For instance, in your case, if you, for reporting purposes, store the data that employee Stuart Miller has participated in the training course for Excel level 2 and has liked the course and has clicked on the number 5 grade. If you store this and report it back to Diageo, your customer, then you need to be in compliance with data protection law. In general, employee data can only be processed or used for a legitimate purpose, and training would be a legitimate purpose, but only to the extent required for the purpose. So you are not allowed to store any data which is not required to render the services. And this is to be looked at very strictly. The data protection authorities, they will look through each and every individual data and ask you, do you really need this? Or could you do it without it? Or could you anonymize it? So this is something you need to carefully look at. And even if there's a legitimate purpose, you always have to check whether there's a prevailing contrary interest of the individual. And it is absolutely conceivable that in the course of training services, you will measure the performance of the trainee, of the user. And if you generate performance data, for instance, like you do a test quickly afterwards to see what he actually learned, then it gets really complicated, because in this area the employee rights are very high valued from a data protection perspective. So that's a tricky issue. This is something which I really recommend to carefully consider if you do performance measuring. Also, what I should mention is that if you generate performance data about an employee, you will need to involve the Works Council. So you need to have a shop agreement or something like that to make sure it works. Okay, one more minute. I'm at the end. I'm sorry to stretch the time that much. Outsourcing is usually commissioned data protection. So you have from a data protection perspective, you have no transfer of data from one entity to the other, because the service provider is considered part of the organization of the customer. So that makes life a lot easier. This is good, because you don't need to comply with the requirements as to a transfer. However, if the service provider is not located within the EU or another safe country, such as Canada, Switzerland, Hungary, Guernsey, things like this, then there's an exception to the rule, and a transfer of data in the sense of data protection law applies. And then the real problem starts. it would take too much time to provide you the answer. There are certain mechanisms to ensure compliance also in that end. For instance, if you have a U.S. service provider, you may join the safe harbor set of rules. That's okay then. But then there are also model contracts issued by the EU to ensure an adequate level of data protection. But it's rather complicated. Okay, sorry for my long talk. I hope there was some helpful information in that for you. And
all right. So I think we sort of overshot our time. So I want to just take a few minutes to summarize what we heard today. I think we all realize that there is the winds of change, as Laura pointed out, and training and L&D functions are changing. They're trying to run training as a business, aligned to the business, and create the impact that is necessary. We saw a case in front of us where Ian talked about selecting a single service provider and then providing the choice for learners, which I think was the biggest value add from what they were doing, as well as they communicated and made sure that the initiative was successful, apart from traditional cost savings and cost avoidance and productivity benefits of using an outsourced training partner. And lastly, I think we learned a lot about services agreements, what should we do, what should we include, what we should not include, some tricky areas. I think that is a very key piece of structuring the relationship, because it is a painful process. We sometimes go through 6 to 9 months of contracting before actually entering into an engagement in some cases. Now, having said that, again, on another flip side, training outsourcing is not really that complex to do either. So what I want to leave you all with is a slide where there are different ways of outsourcing. So instead of doing a total outsourcing, which Mark talked about, there could be selective areas of outsourcing, which is specific functions within the training pyramid. So it may be only development, or maybe just delivery, or maybe just administration. Or in other words, you could look at outsourcing a complete business segment. So for customer healthcare compliance training, or for employee Six Sigma training. So you could then look at the entire function across the horizontal and vertical, but only for a specific initiative. And lastly, there could be specific project-based outsourcing, which is, you know, on a specific initiative where you want to do this for a couple of years. So I'm definitely smarter, before than what I started with this session. So thank you all again, once again, for coming.
NIIT Business Impact Accelerated.